yours.
Thank you. I believe my talk today will be, first of all, shorter than potentially what you're used to. I think I will finish earlier than most of you. And secondly, I think it might be a little bit different because I'm coming from digital humanities. Is there anybody here who also comes from... Okay, all right. Okay, that's great. And I think as a continuation of what Olivier was saying, it's going to be very much about how in interdisciplinary work, it's very sometimes difficult and complex for people coming from different fields to understand each other. So in order to start that, I'm going to first say who I am and where I come from and where I work very quick. I'm Nooshin Asadi. I did a bachelor's in computer engineering at the University of Tehran. Then I did a master's in digital humanities at the University of Bologna. And now I'm doing a PhD at the University of Antwerp, also in digital humanities. And I'm working at the Faculty of Literature with people who work with digital scholarly editions. Now, the problems I face, because a lot of you already come from digital humanities, I believe a lot of you also face. Me, as I said, unlike Olivia, I do not have 30 years of software engineering experience. I only have a bachelor's degree. So sometimes I feel like I'm Superman in this scene. They think my humanities colleagues think that I've got them, but nobody knows who's got me. So yeah, in digital humanities, a lot of us are, let's say, amateurs. So, sometimes getting expert advice can be a little bit difficult. Right now in specifically computational, literary studies, tool prototypes, which are what I work on, are not the best thing to present. Because right now the buzzword is not that. The buzzword right now is generative AI and what you can do with that. And DH, as you all know, is still quite young, and it lags a little bit behind the cutting edge of science, even though it is very buzzwordy. So, and because of that, it happens quite often that the people in places of power in DH communities prefer to work with what has been working so far and are a little bit reluctant to keep working to improve upon things. And yeah, again, as the previous speaker mentioned, team structures in digital humanities have not exactly matured yet. Having that common ground is difficult. Now, what do we do in my research group, which will lead me to my, let's say, tool prototype here? We make digital scholarly editions of manuscripts. In my faculty, in my research group, we work with a different variety of manuscripts, medieval Middle Dutch manuscripts from, for example, the Herne Monastery. But we also use modernist manuscripts. We have a lot of Joyce and Beckett. We also have colleagues who work on born digital manuscripts. Manuscripts that have actually been written on a computer, and the process of making them has been recorded by an input logger. And to analyze a lot of these manuscripts, we use handwritten text recognition to facilitate the transcription of these documents, because one of my colleagues, for example, has thousands upon thousands of pages of police reports from early 1900s in Antwerp, and she uses handwritten text recognition to facilitate the transcription of these documents. And then, of course, as everywhere in academia, we would like to publish our results somewhere. Now, you all are probably familiar with this, but just as a basic starter, the process of handwritten text recognition looks something like this. You first have your manuscript, you scan it, then you put it through a handwritten text recognition platform, from which you end up getting computer-readable text. Then you correct the mistakes you find in there, and that would be the result of this handwritten text recognition process. And what is used very often in the humanities faculties. Are these two programs, Transcribus and eScriptorium? Transcribus is the more popular one, but it's proprietary. It used to work on a freemium model, then it became subscription-based, and it has a centralized server, and they clearly say that they will be using all of your data. So whatever you send over there, they will use, and then they make a model and then sell it to you. It is a very, very good app, but, well, it's not free and open source. eScriptorium is a up-and-coming alternative to Transcribus. It is free and open source. It does not have a centralized server, which is very good in a sense, but it also makes it less popular because of that, because people who work in the humanities usually are not very technically capable of setting up their own institutional server, and sometimes they would need supercomputers if they have a lot of complex data. So that's another issue that exists with eScriptorium. But on the other hand, everything could be shared. Now these two are really, really good. Transcribus actually has a tagline, unlock the past, and it's amazing. You get to train models and unlock your past and get a lot of transcripts. But then the output of these two programs ends up either just being downloaded as plain text and put in an archive, never to be seen again, or used for distant reading, for some kind of computational literary analysis, counting how many times so-and-so word was used. But specifically in my research group, what we do, Digital Scholarly Editions, we really care about that inherent connection between the text and the actual manuscript, in this case, TypeScript. This is, for example, the BDMP, the Beckett Digital Manuscript Project. And as you can see, this was done completely manually. This was before Transcribus, et cetera, was a thing. And the people who made it, it was actually done in our faculty, really cared that the person can see exactly what line and how it was written. It was not just the text that was important, but the connection between the context, the content of the text, and the form of it was actually an important part of this process. So now the options to publish whatever it is you have with the text, the image with the text, are either to make bespoke digital editions from scratch, which requires lots of money, lots of time, lots of effort, use Transcribus sites, which starts at over 47 euros a month if you have more than 1,000 pages. It is, again, not free or open source. It is not for the users of eScriptorium. Or to use TEI Publisher, which is free and open source, but it loses the text-to-image connection. You can use your image and your text, but the text does not have any inherent connection to the image that you have. And it is dependent on the ExistDB ecosystem, which, again, creates a steep learning curve for anybody in the humanities who wants to make it. Now, this is where I come to my proposed solution that is, for now, locally, and also one other faculty is using it, which is a viewer I call Nycturus. I called it Nycturus because the editor I previously made and presented on last year is called Axolotl, and Nycturus is another kind of that species. I don't remember what they are called even. So it is a lightweight and modularized TI viewer and publisher. It is a React component. And process data from Transcribus or eScriptorium, or even not necessarily from the output of a handwritten text recognition platform, can be directly exported to and rendered in it. And the interlinked zones, which is inherently valuable for digital scholarly editions, will still be present to aid the user. This is pretty much the setup of the architecture that we have designed. And these are the features. They're not going to sound out of this world, because this is a room full of software developers. I have pagination, so it's not just one page. You can have as many pages as you want. I have collection support, so you can have multiple books. You have the raw XML view, so you can see it as rendered, beautiful HTML, whatever. But you can also see the lying, the underlying TI XML underneath it. The page layout is flexible. You can replace the manuscript section and the text section different places. You have a collection search. You have authentication. The architecture is API driven, so it's like database agnostic, let's say. And of course, as opposed to most of the options that exist, it is free and open source. This is a sample of what it looks like. It's very, very bare bones. I'm leaving the extra CSS to the people who are using it. This is a sample of those Herne manuscripts I mentioned. As you can see, you have the connection between the text and the lines in the image. And one issue with this was that it was difficult for humanities scholars to set up because, again, this is like you would need a server, a database, and just setting up a web application. Again, humanities scholars could find this difficult. So what I did was I made a GitHub Pages template for a static version of the app that has a lot of those previously mentioned features, not all of them. And the only required skill to get it up and working is minimal familiarity with Git. So you just have to know what like pull and push are, pretty much. And it works very well for smaller projects. And for bigger projects, it can act as a first step, because a number of the archives we've talked to have said, OK, this looks interesting, but is there a way we can put up some of our data on this so that we can see if we like it? And this can act as a first step for that. And this one, this is a digital scholarly edition of the last notebooks of Virginia Woolf, is done with that early template with the that does not have all of the features. As you can see, it looks very much the same. It has 270 pages over 45 documents, and it works pretty well. And the person who made it is not familiar with programming at all, but he made it completely on his own, just using that GitHub template. I just wanted to share this, like, let's say, ad hoc solution that I came up with and how I continued to use it and how other people are using it. This person, for example, who's using it is at Oxford and is doing something that's completely not related to me. But he was looking for something like this, and he just couldn't find anything that would work with his level of digital literacy, let's say. And that's it for my talk. Thank you all so much. Welcome to questions.
We have some questions in the room. We don't have some questions for Lane.
Well, thanks for the talk. It was a very interesting tool, new tool to provide. I was wondering, because I have been facing another project, similar issues, and then I chose to TEI, to display TEI, to enhance it with graphical information.
Yes.
And why didn't you pick Alto, which is the output format, Alto XML is the standard output format, and just convert it to IIIF data annotations, and you would have. So what was the things that triggered the new way of doing things?
That's actually a very interesting question, and we've had a lot of talks about this at our research group. The thing is that people who work with digital scholarly editions specifically want to use TEI because TEI has some specific tags that the people who work, for example, with genetic editing really need, for example, to set up their apparatus, the genetic apparatus of how a manuscript was edited. And Aalto is focused on where in the page everything is, which makes a lot of sense. What you get out of Transcribus and eScriptorium is actually also either Aalto or Page XML. I end up transforming this. That is why I developed that editor I previously mentioned. There I transform them to TEI because the people who make these digital scholarly editions still very much only want to use TEI. That's the reason. Yeah. Thank you.
Are there any other questions? Then let's take the speaker again.
Thank you.